Hello everyone, welcome to the 13th episode of the Angel Swing Weekend Chat. This is June from the Angel Swing account, and we are here today with our lovely co-hosts Casper Espresso, Johannes, and Rubble. So yeah, Casper, do you want to briefly tell our audience what we're doing and how our journey started?
Yeah, sure. It's always my pleasure.
That's fine.
Yeah,
yep.
Perfect.
All right. Okay, so we started the Angel Swing mainly as a gallery that features independent artists and their art, because I realized that they weren't getting enough feature and getting drowned out by the 10K PFP projects. But I think we've slowly evolved into more of like a community, which is great as well. Do join our Discord or just hit us up on DMs if you wish to just join us and find out what we do. Or if you're an artist that wants your art to be featured, just let us know and we'll be glad to get in touch. So we do have weekly spaces where we talk about mostly independent art features, but also we are evolving to talk about other topics that might be of more recent interest. For example, like today, we'll just be talking a bit more about generative art, which might not be directly linked to independent artists, but we think it's just something interesting to talk about. And so that's where we are right now.
Yeah, thank you, Casper, for the introduction. So yeah, I would like to invite Espresso now to give us a brief introduction about what generative art actually is. Because I think there's a lot of confusion also about the term, what this means, and particularly regarding its differentiation to AI art.
Yeah, thank you, June. So, let's start with the question of what is generative art. And I would say generative art is a new kind of subfield of digital art. And it's not exactly new. We can get into that later. It has some distinguishing features where I think the main property of generative art is that it's actually code that generates art when you look at it in the browser. So there's not necessarily a pre-made JPEG, but there's code that runs in your browser when you look at it, and that's what generates the artwork that you're looking at. And I think it can be good to distinguish this from other kinds of digital art, which are related, but not exactly the same. So you mentioned AI art, which is also a big field on the rise these days. And there's lots of great AI art coming out as well. The AI art, I would say, is art that's generated using a machine learning model, typically some kind of GAN, generative adversarial network. And in that case, you have an artist that tweaks and tunes the model to produce the outputs they want, and then they curate a set of final outputs. So then you actually have like a set of 200 artworks that are generated by this model and then released as a collection, and it's all pre-generated typically. Some people might have also heard about the term generated art, so ED at the end, not generative. Generated art is commonly used as a term for like these 10K PFP collections, for example, where the art is basically layers that are put on top of each other, like layered PNGs that make the final image. So that's something different. That's not generative art. The code is the central component of the generative art. And I think building on that, I think we should start with talking a bit about art blocks before we get into FXH. And I would like to hear Casper talk about what what is art blocks and what did they do as the kind of pioneering force in this field?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Espresso. So just to maybe summarize again for our new listeners coming in, the differentiation between generative art, AI-generated art, and generated art is that generative art is what we are talking about mainly today, right? FX hash and art blocks. Whereas generated art, it's basically all your 10K PFP projects, and AI-generated art is mainly those text or computer-assisted art in a text-to-art format. Am I getting this right, Espresso?
Yeah, that's a good summary.
Okay. So my journey into art blocks was, for those that are new to the space, art blocks is pretty much the pioneer project of generative art. So I started the journey with a friend who introduced me to art blocks because he had a ringer that he bought for a few ETH, and it pumped to almost like 100 ETH. And of course, I'm not ashamed to say this, a lot of projects get visibility because of the investment value, quote unquote, that it brings to investors. To be very frank, the ringers didn't really jive or resonate with me because to me they were just circles and lines. But what really got my attention was the Fidenzas by Tyler Hobbs. And those are pretty much the grail of art blocks. The highest sale for Fidenzas actually went up to 3.3 million USD. That's 1,000 ETH in August 2021. And that's when everybody sat up and said, holy crap, what are we looking at? Is this going to be the next big thing, right? I mean, it was already big, but that's when everybody jumped on the bandwagon. I think Three Arrows Capital and Vincent Van Doe also tried, also started up a fund, a $100 million fund that was meant to invest in NFTs, and that's kind of what got the entire art blocks journey going. So I think that was pretty much the so-called OG start of my NFT journey, but I could never put down that kind of money to invest in generative art because I'm not sure how to value these collections, given that they were not exactly tagged to traits like Bored Ape traits, for example. But that's valuation of generative art would be another topic for another day. But just a very quick 101 on art blocks is that the entire collection is huge. There are many, many different sub-collections within art blocks. But the three main subdivisions within art blocks are, number one, the highest tier, it's called the art blocks curated tier, which basically goes through a pretty rigorous process where the art blocks guys go through and select very selectively the best projects. And then we have the tier called the art blocks playground tier, which are for the art blocks curated artists to experiment on. And then the third tier, which I wouldn't call it the lowest tier, but it's the easiest to access if you're an artist, it's called the factory tier. And that's the tier where you don't really have to go through the rigorous process of being, of going through the curated process. But these are artists who just want to experiment a bit more with their code and release projects that are a bit more playful and kind of pushes the boundaries of what art blocks can accept as a so-called curated project. So this is just a very brief introduction of art blocks and kind of like how I started my journey. I think there's also a pin about the top three projects right now that I would say if money was no object, these would be my favorites, right? So I mentioned Fidenzas, which would be my pick for investment value because it seems like no matter how badly ETH dips, the floor is still at like 70 or 80. It was at 30 ETH at some point, but it very quickly rebounded to 70 to 80 ETH. Even at these levels, that's a crazy amount for single NFT. And then we also do have fragments of an infinite field. I really like those, not just for the investment value, but because the code was able to generate a field of very beautiful flowers, leaves, petals. And last but not least, I would like to highlight this project called Meridian. It's by Matt DeLaurius. And the reason why I like it is that it shows a kind of like a topographical representation of hills and mountains in the distance. So if you see the common theme behind the generative projects that I like, it's more of how code can actually create pictures and compositions that represent nature very well. That's something that's very subjective but very personal to me. So that's pretty much what I would like to share, and I'll hand the mic back to Espresso. I'm not sure if that was a comprehensive enough introduction to both art blocks as well as my own personal journey.
Yeah, thank you, Casper. You mentioned the regular tier of art blocks. Is this like a open tier to everyone, or is it still kind of like re require some like of application stuff?
I do believe all the art blocks tiers to get into their classification, you do need to put in an application. But whether or not you get into the curated tier or the factory tier, those are the different tiers which require different levels of rigor.
Okay, thank you. So it's very different actually than compared to FX Hash, which is like an open platform where everyone can upload their code art, basically. Yeah, so Espresso, do you want to tell us about this platform a bit and what you like about it?
Yeah, happy to. So excited to talk about this topic. And thank you, Casper, for going through the origins and the art blocks side of it. And for me, I was like the personal stories that I was kind of getting deep into NFTs sometime around August last year, I guess. And that was kind of on the heels of a mega run in art blocks. Like it was really, that summer was crazy for art blocks, with lots of focus and attention and lots of great projects, and I was priced out of all of it. So I don't have a lot of art blocks pieces. I think I have three factory pieces or something. And after that kind of cooled down a bit and a few months passed, in November, there was this interesting new platform launching called FX Hash over on Tezos, so different blockchain, not Ethereum. And as you mentioned, the defining kind of property of this new platform is that it's open. There's no curation process. There's no kind of approvals that need to be passed to publish work. Anyone can make an account and upload a project or many projects. And that is core to the philosophy that the creator of FX Hash, Seifert, put forward as kind of his motivation for building it. And he's an artist himself, a generative artist, and he has published a few very important collections. So he hasn't had a lot of time actually doing generative art though after launching this platform because it took off like crazy in a good way with a lot of artists publishing work and a lot of people discovering the platform over the coming months. So I look back at kind of the history. I think the first mint was, or the first project was launched November 3rd. And I was lucky enough to be in the Zen Academy Discord in the art channel at the time where Matt W., which is a big, big and important person to follow on Twitter for all things FX Hash and Tezos and art. He was mentioning FX Hash and how the FX Hash logo project, in his view, would come to be a kind of defining important project for that platform. And the logo project, just to say what that is, that's actually a generative art collection of the FX Hash logo in various forms. So some of them have features, some of them have other color schemes, some of them have some distortions. So it's kind of a showcase of what generative art can do in a way. So that was really the first collection that I bought sometime late November last year. And I think the fact that this platform is open is attracting a lot of great artists and also emerging artists. That's very important. It's a good place to start out when you're starting out in generative art. There's a lot of different types of art. So as a collector, you'll be sure to find something you like. And typically we can kind of talk about the different types of projects because as Caspar mentioned, this representing nature with code is a big theme for some projects. Like that, there are lots of great projects in that area, lots of geometric more shape focused projects exploring what kind of shapes and color schemes and effects and animations you can make with code. There's still images, animated works, and yeah, really a lot of different art to choose from. So that was kind of a quick intro. Questions? I see Casper and Johannes have raised hands.
Okay, I'm going to go first because you mentioned my name first.
welcome.
The very obvious question would be compared to art blocks, because I didn't know this that FX Hash was an entirely open platform that didn't require a curation process. So I've been browsing through the FX Hash website, and actually the quality of the project seem to be still pretty high. How does the community seem to be able to self-select the project so that there's no real, like, for lack of a better word, rubbish, you know, that comes onto the platform?
Yeah, I'm happy you have that that impression. I share that view. There's generally a high standard for the work that's being published. I think there are some exceptions, of course, as well, and I think at the lack of having a curation board or any formal process, it's more that kind of the artists themselves feel that there's kind of a certain level of quality they need to hit to publish, is my impression. Like they will typically hear artists, when they present work in progress on Twitter or talk about the project, that a project can be months in the making. Like it's some of these projects, the amount of work that goes into these generative art projects is very impressive. And that really reflects in the art itself. So that kind of sets the standard for everything that's published. That being said, there is also kind of low effort pieces if you look for it. And one good thing about FXHash, which I have to mention, is that there's a very active moderation team. So they're very active both in the Discord and on site, flagging projects that are copy mints, for example. It's like this is code and it's all open source. That's also a great property of this. Like you can literally, when you watch the artwork, you can go to view source in your browser and literally look at the code that made this art, which is great. In a way that it makes it easy for people to learn the tricks of the masters. But this also has the downside of it's super easy to copy. And so anyone can just publish a project that's a copy of someone else's code. And the moderation team have been great at flagging those instances and removing them from the UI and really been active and are a big part of the success, because this could easily have kind of transcended into mayhem without moderation, I feel.
Can I briefly just mention that also a key difference is that Artblocks is actually on Ethereum while FXHash is on Tezos. And as you said, I mean, there are lots of high quality projects out there on FXHash and for quite a affordable cost also, which is kind of nice. So, which is almost kind of open to everyone to collect. And there's one question that I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that the code is, of course, open to everyone to look at. And it's also easy kind of to copy this. Regarding IP and copyright, I mean, let's when someone takes a code from another artist and kind of modifies a bit. And would this consider be like new artwork or not really?
Well, it all depends. There's been some notable examples of kind of projects that are clearly inspired by another project. And as long as the artist is open about the inspirations, and also typically it helps a lot to be active in the Discord and in the community and kind of ask for directions and help on determining where to draw the line. Like when is my project unique enough that I can release it as my own, even though it's clearly inspired. Like we had an example of clearly inspired work earlier this year, where an artist called Tsumi was making a really beautiful nature scene with the staircase and lots of flowers. And you could clearly see the inspiration back to Sankan and some of the amazing Sankan works. And by the way, Sankan is kind of the FXHash poster boy, grail producer on the platform. The reason that project from Tsumi got a good was kind of received in a good way was that the artist had been open about this all along in the process, clearly stated in the description of the project that I'm inspired by these works and this is my own code. And so by doing it the right way, I think that's definitely manageable.
Thank you. Johannes, I'm sorry that I kind of spoke before you.
Oh, no problem. I just wanted to also take a look on the technical point of this coding. I think, as far as I understand, Artblocks is very much on-chain, which means the JavaScript framework itself is not on the chain. But the artists have to be very few keystrokes on Artblocks, because everything which is generating then the image is on the Ethereum blockchain, which is super expensive to create to put the code on the blockchain. And this is also a very limiting factor for Artblocks, which gives in the end exactly this look and feel you have on Artblocks. And as far as I understand the technical process on FXHash, it's there are fewer limitations because the actual code is not anywhere on the blockchain. It's put it on IPFS and executed from this location. So you have a lot of more options to use more JavaScript frameworks and write more lines of code, which is then also giving you the bigger amount of variations that you see in the end. So theoretically, I could use on FXHash any JavaScript frameworks, and I'm not limited to, for example, P5.js as on Artblocks, right, Casper? Yeah. Espresso?
Yes, that's correct. So as you say, Artblocks are actually uploading the actual JavaScript code to their smart contract as part of releasing a project. So it's on-chain, and FXHash is using IPFS. And so there's less restrictions, and you can have a bigger code base, bigger project using that approach. And FXHash also take responsibility of pinning the files on IPFS. That's also important to mention.
So if I buy a Fidenza, chances are more higher that it will exist in 50 years. And if I buy something on Tezos, if nobody pays for the pin, the art goes away.
Well, yeah, technically you're right. But I obviously think that the chance is very slim that that's actually going to happen, given the big success that this platform has had already. And all of the people that are now primarily FXHash collectors, like that's the kind of new genre of collector. So there's a lot of buy-in and support for this platform. And it's also a profitable approach. Like FXHash takes a small percentage of the fee of the mints and the secondary sales. And that's enough to sustain this platform and the development, including the IPFS bills.
Yeah, this is not a critique at all, but I think it's important to know where the technical constraints are. The one platform is completely or more nearly on-chain, and the other platform is outsourcing all the code to a decentralized file storage, which is also nice. I mean, if IPFS goes down, nearly any NFT project would have a problem, right?
Yes, that's true. So it's good to be aware and point that out, yes. So,
Rubble, you have a question.
Yeah, actually, I thought it was quite interesting to hear a lot of talk about code when it comes to art. I guess that's the genre of generative art. But I just wanted to hear Casper and Espresso's thoughts. How do you think the direction or the potential of Artblocks and FXHash would grow in the future? Because it seems like, to generate the art, you as an artist, you need to learn the code and then you input into the... Sorry, I'm being very layman here. You input into the platform and the platform generates the art. And then presumably the supply will be quite a lot. So what do you think would be the direction of art that comes out from Artblocks and FXHash?
Yeah, I don't mind taking this first. I think that's a really good question, Rebel. I'm not so sure about the supply of artists that are able to... or rather the number of coders that would be able to translate their work into art. But I think one of the problems of why I didn't overinvest into Artblocks was, first of all, their pieces had a very high entry point, especially their curated pieces. But I think one of the things was also that the supply of collections would always keep increasing, right? And there are only that many collections that will remain OG, like the Fidenzas, for example. So I actually had, to be very open, I had two Artblock's curated pieces only because I was very curious, and I bought into the whole, oh, the Artblock's curated collection was going to be at Sotheby's and Christie's. I mean, that was the level of hype and rage. That was how much Artblock's was the rage back then in the third quarter of 2021. To see a collection that you own go to Christie's and Sotheby's is really something. I think it truly validates the value of what NFTs could really be. And unfortunately, you have to realize that the supply of Artblock's collections will only increase. And unless your OG collections continue to be the ones that are featured at these auction houses, or somehow the market recognizes these as the collections to be, it will be just like any other NFT project, I feel. Like how the Bored Apes and Punks remain the OGs. You just have to be lucky enough to, I guess, invest in the right collections. And we all know that art is so subjective. And I mean, if you put the Fidenzas in front of me at that point in time before they exploded, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that they would reach 100 to 200 ETH, you know. So I think, long story short and in conclusion, I think it's very, very difficult, and the same rules apply to Artblock's as with any NFTs. The supply will only just increase. So just be very careful and do know what you're doing before plonking down 100 ETH on a single NFT.
Yeah, that's true. And just to add to that, I think it's going to be challenging to approach this like an investment in many ways. Like the way I've been looking at it on FXHash is that I love that the entry point is really low, so it's possible to get started, like doing zero test mints, so free mints or one test, and one test right now is worth right below $2, I think. You shouldn't really kind of do that if you're just looking for financial gain. I know there's been a lot of successful flippers on FXHash as well, especially lately, like the last 2 months, I feel, have been an insane bull run for FXHash. But I wouldn't recommend anyone like go get started doing that. Like this is a platform to collect art first and foremost, and I'm also the first one to admit that I really don't want to sell anything. Like if I could choose, so I only sell if I, for example, have minted three of something and one of them is a monochrome or a green one that I don't like, so I prefer the others, so I can sell one to mint something else. And by the way, there are people that build theme collections. So there are people that really love the monochrome works, and I know that. So since I really prefer the bold color schemes and the beautiful animations. So if I mean something monochrome, I know there's a market for that. I can list it. I can get some tests back and mint another. And same for the green ones that I mentioned. Sankan, he's kind of famous for collecting only green pieces. So that's kind of funny. And he has a really beautiful collection, by the way. So there's certainly a market and certainly financial opportunities to flip or sell at a profit. But yeah, that's not why I'm there. And so you'll have to ask someone else for how to do that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add also, I pinned one of my previous tweets not too long ago where the Tezos had a booth feature at Art Basel Hong Kong. And I mean, I'm pretty impressed by this, right? That that an NFT platform, or rather NFT chain, would be featured in Art Basel and managed to squeeze their way in there, even though they were using a separate entrance and all that. But I just think that the fact that Art Blocks was at Sotheby's and Christie's, you see Tezos being featured at Art Basel, I do agree with Espresso that there's definitely a market for these generative art projects. And I think the key is that you need to be very selective about the projects that you are in. And if you're not sure, then just make sure you don't overinvest and always just follow the number one rule of only investing what you can afford to lose, because especially with NFTs and art, everything is so subjective. But I think the message I really want to bring across is that generative art is really being recognized in the traditional art markets, and we are only just seeing the beginnings of it. So I'm not sure if this is the first time that Tezos is featured in a major art exhibit, or have they been featured before?
Yeah, as far as I know, this is the first feature like this by Art Basel or any kind of big exhibit like this. If there's been some earlier, then please let us know. And by the way, we do record spaces and put them on YouTube so people can listen back later. So feel free to comment on YouTube as well. I think it was great to see FXH and Tezos being featured at Art Basel. And I'm curious to hear from you, Kasper, which of these projects you liked the most and why?
So for me, the theme always goes back to nature, right? So there is this FXH project called Herbarium, which I unfortunately didn't manage to mint at Art Basel, but I bought off secondary. If you take a look at the pinned tweet, it's the one with the blue-colored flower-like picture. And it's actually semi-animated. And the reason why I like it is, again, it translates code very elegantly to nature. And that's something that really resonates with me. Because I could never imagine that code could be so, how should I put it, aesthetically represented, not just in bits and bytes, but in a pictorial format that is so pleasing to the eye. But the rest of the projects also kind of blew my mind as to how creative they were with colors, shapes, and compositions. Yeah, so I think this space is definitely going to grow. But I think if you want to focus just on the financial returns aspect of it, that might not be the best idea. Maybe just focus on why you're in it, right? Like appreciating the art first and then financial returns later.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I shared the view that these projects that were featured at Art Basel were really beautiful and mind-blowing. And I did acquire one of these on secondary, the Mythologic, that you'll have there bottom right in this pin tweet. So yeah, and also they were very well received also by the FXH community. Some of the artists, or in each of these projects, there was a set amount of pieces for in-person minting, and then an additional set of pieces in each project that the artist could give out as they wished. So some of the artists opened up for holders of previous work, and those could mint on FXH after Art Basel from these projects as well. So I was able to do that as well for one of them, so really grateful for that. And we can talk about kind of the mechanics of how it works, like how FXHash works, but maybe we should spend a bit more time on notable projects first, because there are so many highlights. So what do you think, June?
Yeah, totally. There's one thing so I wanted to ask you. So generative art exists since, I don't know, 1960s, 70s, maybe. So it has been actually around since a while. And and myself, I tried to, as you know, I tried, like, it's beginning of the year, I tried to learn P5 myself a bit. And I was actually surprised to see that this type of aesthetic, it's really something that exists already since some time. And I was wondering why is this, I mean, of course, the NFT space is kind of just perfect to showcase this type of art. But do you have an idea? Or, I mean, it's just like maybe my ignorance, why, like, we see kind of this explosion of generative art right now in this last few years.
Yeah, so you're right that it has existed for a long time. It has a history back to the kind of the beginning of computers. And there are important early artists like Vera Molnar or Casey Rias and people that have contributed a lot to this space and also built some of the frameworks that we use today to make art. So P5.js is a JavaScript framework that was heavily inspired by the processing framework which is in Java, which was originally made by Casey Rias and others. So it has certainly a long history, and I think you're right that the reason it's really gaining traction now is that NFTs are just perfect for this. I mean, why haven't anyone thought of NFTs before for generative art? It's like it's a match made in heaven, because here you have a way to generate a varied set of artworks within a collection, and each of them can be an NFT. So you have kind of the tech to distribute it to owners. People can own them and actually verify on chain that yes, this is mine. And there's the possibility of a market for them. So it's easier for artists to get paid, which I think I do see kind of a long history back to, like, for example, here in Europe, the demo scene has been a really strong force in kind of the tech scene for, like, back to the 80s, 90s.
I'm so happy that you're mentioning this. I wanted to say all the time, demo scene. I was such a big fan of demo scene when the Commodore 64 was a thing, and the demo scene is still active, but they never managed to monetize this. But I'm so happy that you said that you mentioned this. I was a so big demo scene fan.
Yeah, that's great. That's great here. And I've also been a big fan for a long time and been amazed at what people can do with code. And the demo scene was really all about how can we write code to make amazing graphics on the available hardware and really compress it down to like the smallest possible set of code to make amazing graphics. And artists like Peter Passmore, for example, in a recent interview on a different podcast, the Waiting to Be Signed podcast, which is FXHash specific, was going into detail about how he was active in the demo scene and writing optimized assembly code to generate graphics and how he has kind of just transitioned these skills into JavaScript and is continuing to write really optimized code that's producing amazing outputs. So I see this kind of as a big enabler. The NFT technology has a big enabler because digital art has always had this issue, I feel, of, yeah, it looks great, but there's no way to pay the artist. Like the only way an artist could get paid in digital art previously, I feel, was by getting hired by a brand to make some graphics. And that's not great, right? that's not a sustainable way to have an art movement in the digital space. So NFTs are really the unlock that we all needed.
Yeah, thank you, Espresso. So let's talk about some of your favorite projects. I'm going to pin like three projects that I also like, and you're going to tell us why you kind of collected that piece. So the first one is this hyper giraffe.
Oh yes, this is by Peter Pasma, the artist I just mentioned. So hyper giraffe is an example of what he is able to achieve with a very minimal set of code. So he has really been focused on how can he make something beautiful out of a minimal set of code, typically pushing for like the smallest amount of kilobytes. And Peter Pasma is also an art blocks artist. And that's also a theme you'll see with many of the FXH artists, that they have works on various platforms. They might have works on Artblock, they might have work on other platforms or one-on-ones on Tezos or on Ethereum. So I was very happy to be able to collect this piece. I think it's amazing, and this one in particular spoke to me because I see a mask and an eye in this, in the left, on the left side of it. And if you look at the collection, it's a bunch of different shapes. So this is by randomness, this appeared, and I love that. So yeah, that was my motivation for collecting this one.
Would you say that you have developed like addiction to minting this? Because if I look at your collection, you have like thousands of pieces or even more collected. And I can imagine that once you start to mint, then you want to see what additional outputs you get, because every output is just kind of unique, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's so great. And yes, I have to admit I'm hooked on minting on FXH and collecting on FXH. Like, I don't have thousands, but I'm pushing close to 1,000 pieces now in the collection. And this is really kind of me feeling that, okay, I was priced out of art blocks, but FXH was the second chance to get in on generative art. And I truly went all in. Even though I haven't like spent massive amounts of money, I feel I've been typically minting a lot, and then if something is growing in value, and I've been listing some pieces just to be able to continue to mint. But yeah, I definitely jumped all in. So this is my main art collection. I do have a growing collection of great one-on-one indie art as well. So I love that scene as well. But yeah, these are kind of my two arenas for collecting art.
Okay, so we have the next piece is Contra. Can you tell us a bit why you liked that piece? I mean, I like the illusion how light actually kind of falling on these geometrical pattern, which is kind of nice to give it almost like a painted feel, I would say.
Yeah, I love that that insight, and I've been attracted to this piece specifically because of the patterns. Like, it feels very structured. Like, you have these columns and the rectangles in different colors, but then you see that the shadows behind, which kind of push these elements out of order. So it feels like a fight between order and chaos, which I find really interesting. And in general, I am attracted to pieces where there's a kind of dramatic scene in a way, where there's multiple things going on, and also if there's a color scheme like this, then I'm all for it. And also this one in particular is special to me because I minted it. And this was one of the early projects. Like, I think I minted this on day two in my FXHash journey. So day one was buying logos and day two was minting Contra. So this is definitely a special in that sense. I love everything about this one.
Yeah, as you said, you mentioned about it. It's also something that I find GenerateDARF extremely attractive. Is not just the modern aesthetic, but trying to create something that has a structure and order, but still bring like some sort of randomness into it, which makes it kind of very very interesting. So the last artwork we want to talk about is artwork by Camille Roux, who is actually also in our audience. Welcome. So Espresso, tell us a bit about this piece and what you like about it.
Yes, thank you. I'm honored to have Camille in the audience. That's amazing. And this project is one of my all-time favorites. And I'm not just saying that because Camille is listening, but he knows how much I love this. And we have been chatting about it. And as a side note, that's another thing I love about FXHash and this community of artists, because everyone else are approachable and friendly, and it's easy to ask questions and have kind of a discussion with people. And that just blows my mind that that's possible. People that I admire and make great art are approachable as well. So speaking about this particular project, so this is a project where the animation really makes it unique. And I do have a tweet also with kind of did a screen grab of the animation, because it starts out in the middle point. So it starts out in one point or two or three, depending on the variant. And then it grows organically in a beautiful way, expanding out to cover the entire canvas. And I'm just amazed at how, first of all, how is that possible to do with code, and second of all, all of these beautiful pieces that are in this collection. I do have several. This was the one I wanted to bring up as a highlight. It has a dark background, which most of them have a light background, and this one in particular is perfectly balanced and symmetrical it's amazing. So I think it's the kind of organic growth and animation that really makes this project special for me, I feel.
Thank you, Espresso. So Camille, we'd like to briefly invite you to introduce yourself briefly and tell us a bit about yourself and why you like generative art, if you opted.
This wasn't planned at all, so I'm walking in the street, so sorry for the noise. Thank you so much for the description. it was very lovely. Thank you very much. I can do a better description of Altaïr than you, so thank you very much.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you for joining us on the spot like this. So maybe this is a good time for you to mention that you're working on a new project that's inspired by this.
Yes, actually. It was very fun to work with autonomous agent. So I'm working on a new project with the same basic principle. You can see it's hard to describe. I'm not very good in English, so sorry for that. They're going to have some group of agents, and it's going to be maybe more structured. It's not finished, so I like to improvise. So let's see where it's going.
Thank you. Yeah, the work in progress that you shared on Twitter looks great, and really love to see where you're taking this concept. That's also a good keyword, that it's comprised of agents that kind of interact. Because you'll see if people look at the collection as a whole, some pieces or many pieces actually have multiple points of origin where these patterns grow from. So I guess that means that these are represented as individual agents in the code.
Yeah, Abby Goldchild write a very interesting blog post about emergence, and I think it's a part of generative art we can see, and Artaria is, and everything playing with agents is a nice example of what we call emergence. The concept is so complex. It's the result of a succession of unpredictable events. So even me, it's very hard to imagine what is going to happen. And it's what we call emergence.
Right. Yes, emergence. That's a word. So Rebel, you have a question.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Camille.
Hi.
So I am not a coder. I was just curious about, you know, the kind of effort that is put in to create the generative art. Would you be able to share briefly?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question. Could you repeat?
What kind of effort is involved in creating the art?
Sorry, I missed the word. What?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like, yeah. What do you have to do to,
she's asking for the she's asking for the amount of lines of code and the amount of hours you have to put in.
Yeah.
Oh. Lines of code, please.
Okay, how complex it is to create that? Is that the question?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like the effort, how many, how long.
Oh, effort. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm a non-coder, so just couldn't imagine. Yeah.
Artaria, I think it's between 1 and 2 months of work. I think it's that. It's not linear because, of course, it's creation, so a lot of code I'm doing are just going to be deleted later because it's not a good direction. But yeah, maybe between 1 and 2 months of work.
Okay, and I suppose it's like a repeated process. So you would code and see what's the output, and then you mentioned you sometimes do not use the code.
Yeah, I guess it's very different for every artist. What I like to do it is to begin with a concept. For Artaria, it was autonomous agent. I have a very basic idea of what they could do. So if there is nothing is happening, they go straight forward. They die when they meet another one, and that's it. I begin with that. I did a blog post. You can see the very first try, and it's very, very basic. And after that, I tried a lot of things. Like I did physics rule to make them rotate, to make them some spiral, etc. It was just a lot of try. When the project is quite advanced, I like to generate a lot of outputs and find which I like the most and which I don't like. Some are green, some are red. And my goal is to have the most green I can and no red. When I have no red on a lot of on a big number of outputs, I'm okay to release the project.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's also a very good point to be aware of when it comes to generative art, that the artist doesn't curate the set of final outputs that go into the collection. So the collection is generated one mint at a time. So, as Camille mentioned, the artists need to build up confidence that this algorithm is actually producing mostly or only placing outputs, and then trust that it's ready for launch. So I can only imagine how much effort that takes to be certain that the code is actually producing a good output on every mint.
Thank you, Espresso. I unfortunately have to leave very soon, so we're gonna have to wrap this up. Final question to you. If someone would like to start collecting on FX Hash, where should she or he start? Because I'm aware that it's just like there are so many projects and it's kind of also overwhelming just to get an overview.
Yeah, that's a good question to wrap up with. So first of all, the first basic steps is to get a few Tezos converting at an exchange from some other currency and make a wallet. And Temple and Kukai are the two main wallets that are used on the Tezos blockchain. So both of those are good. And then browsing FXHash can be a bit overwhelming at start because there's close to 15,000 individual projects now, going back all the way to the beginning. And I think what I like to do is just browse the Explore tab and look for some projects that have kind of an interesting output and are still open for mint. So that's what I would recommend people to start with. Just find something that looks good and then try out the minting experience, because the minting experience is also super fun. You click mint and you approve the transaction in the wallet. And then when it's confirmed, which can take like 30 seconds, then you can look at what you minted, but it typically goes through a process that takes a few minutes before it's finally confirmed in your collection and viewable. And what happens in those minutes is that the FXHash backend is rendering the artwork and making the metadata, uploading it to IPFS and signing it. So that's where kind of the phrase "waiting to be signed" comes from, which this podcast has chosen as the name of the podcast as well. Excellent choice, because that kind of signing process can be unexpected for new people to the platform, but it really just means that the FXHash backend is making a preview image of the work you collected and saving the metadata in a signed form to IPFS and signing it on the blockchain. So starting by minting something, anything that you would like, and then I can really recommend jumping into the FXHash Discord. There's a lot of good work in progress being shared there, and good discussions. And there's also a number of tools built around FXHash. The one to mention here is Tender, or FX Tender, which is a website that has a curated selection of FXHash projects. Since FXHash is open for all, there are third-party sites that present a curated set. And that's also a very good starting point to get a sense of what's the scope of work that's available. And of course, by the time something gets curated and featured on a site like that, it might be out of reach for new people, like price-wise. More often than not, there will be some gems that are still open for minting or accessible on the secondary. So Tender is also a good place to check out to get a good overview.
Thank you so much for this fantastic episode, everyone. It was very interesting. And I'm sure we need to talk more about generative art in the future. Thank you so much to our listeners and also to Camille for jumping in spontaneously and tell us a bit about his work and to our speakers, Casper and Espresso. And have a great Sunday, everyone, and talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Thanks, everyone.